give a short talk explaining what today means and a little bit about the purpose of this sort of ceremony. So, our understanding is that 2600 years ago, according to Sri Lankan reckoning, on this very day, 2600 years ago exactly, the Buddha first gave his first teaching. And for those of you who are not familiar with the story of the Buddha, I'll just give a little bit of background here. So the man who was to be the Buddha, many people know this much about the story. He was a prince, and at the age of 29, he got fed up with the meaninglessness of luxury and the life as a prince in a royal household. And so he decided to leave home in order to seek out some answers to these questions. Why we have to be born? Why are we born? Why do we get old? Why do we get sick? Why do we die? What's the point of it all? And how to overcome this? What to do? What is it that we have to do? What is the way to find freedom from suffering? And so he spent 6 years trying in vain to find an answer, a way out of suffering, to find a real answer to the problems in life. You know, for his whole prince life, it was the understanding that the way out of suffering is to find more and more pleasure, to engage in pleasant experiences and find ways to avoid unpleasant experiences. And after 29 years of living this way, he realized that this wasn't sufficient. That, as I've talked about before, you can only escape unpleasant situations for so long. Once you realize that there's no way to escape old age, sickness, and death, then the answer that is seeking out sensual pleasure is not sufficient. I mean, it's like medicine that isn't strong enough for the sickness. There's no amount of pleasure which can take away the reality of old age, sickness, and death, and in fact, in some ways it makes these things worse, because it creates partiality and addiction and aversion. And so he realized that there was no amount of money or luxury, no amount of power or influence that could overcome these things, that could stop these things. You can't buy your way out of death, and you can't survive. None of the luxury or power or influence that you have in this life survives with you after your death. You have to give it all up, 100%. So he spent 6 years trying to find a better answer. And it was fruitless, because he didn't have a clear idea of where to look. The story goes, or the commentary to the story, is that he had, in a past life, because it took many, many lifetimes for him to develop his mind to the state where he was able to even come to these realizations and leave home, you know, without a teacher, without anyone's guidance, to do it on his own, especially from such a wonderful pleasurable lifestyle, something very difficult. But in one of his past lifetimes, some long, long time ago, he saw some, or he saw a enlightened being, someone who had done the same thing and gone and become, come to realize the truth and come to find a way out of suffering. And he was an ignorant person at the time, and so he said, oh, they were torturing themselves. This person was torturing himself. He said something nasty to this enlightened being. No, useless, no good, good for nothing, doing something that's torturing yourself. And they say that's the reason, because he had set himself on this idea that a person who leaves home is torturing themselves. When it finally came time for him to leave home, he had this wrong idea that torturing himself was the right way out of suffering. And in fact, this was a common belief at the time of the Buddha. This was the belief of people in India at the time, that the way out of suffering was to burn up your attachments. So if you're attached to things that are pleasant, then you should teach yourself to be content with unpleasantness by creating unpleasant situations, making it difficult for yourself, creating suffering, because this would offset the pleasure that you have, the attachment that you have to pleasure. And this is actually quite reasonable, and it's actually something that we do often. Even if we haven't left the home life, we feel guilty about our pleasures, so we torture ourselves. People who work very hard will often have this idea that they want this and want that, and they feel guilty about it, and so they think the right thing to do is to work very, very hard and make trouble for yourself, really. But they'll say how people who just indulge in pleasure are lazy and so on, and they'll develop this idea that if you want to be a good person, you have to work. You need a good work ethic, which is really pretty silly. It's something that is driving our world. You know, there are two driving forces in the world. One is our incessant quest for pleasure, and the other is this idea that somehow we have to work, somehow we have to develop and advance. And so they really go hand in hand. The idea that the best thing we can do is indulge, and the idea that the best thing we can do is develop or create. The best thing we can do is work. And so we engage in all sorts of silly works to create things, and thinking that somehow this is a morally right thing. There was a famous philosopher in America, Henry David Thoreau, who was very critical of this idea. These people who work, he told a story of something about this man who had an ox pull a stone across the field, and then later on pull the same stone back to the other side of the field. This is basically what we do, is we engage in useless works, you know, in thinking that somehow it builds character to torture yourself. And so the Buddha did this intensively. This was the idea at the time, that somehow it had spiritual benefit. It actually may have some limited spiritual benefit. I know the Buddha said it was useless or not connected with what is right, but it actually may have the preliminary benefit of opening your mind up to more experiences. So it could very well bring, you know, the patience and forbearance and the ability to tolerance. So it could be useful for meditation in a preliminary way. And, you know, in this sense, we all have to go through this phase, because when we first come to meditate, it can be torture. Having to sit still, having to sit cross-legged, having to eat only in the morning and so on, can be quite difficult, because our tolerance is quite low in the beginning, and our state of being is quite out of balance. And so, just to create balance, we often have to go through some suffering. Just the tension in the body, for example. Many people come to meditate, and just sitting still creates tension in the shoulders, tension in the back, because our minds are tense. Our minds are stress, in a state of stress. So, in some sense, we do have to go through a little bit of torture in the beginning, but we should never have the idea that somehow this is the way out of suffering. When some people come to meditate and they think the idea is to experience suffering, and they will scorn those people who meditate and find peace and happiness and bliss. On the other hand, some people come to meditate and think that it has to be a state of bliss and peace and happiness. And if you're not feeling calm and peaceful, then something's wrong with your meditation. Both of these are wrong understandings, and it leads back to the two extremes. So this is the context that we come into for the Buddha's first teaching. 2 months prior, he had become enlightened, and he spent 2 months walking. That's not true. He spent... Wait a second. Let's get this right. May, June, July. So 2 months, and he spent 49 days reflecting on his enlightenment and living just in the bliss and peace and happiness of enlightenment. And then the last days, what is that? That's actually not many days. We have 49 days, which is 30, 19, so only 11 days or something. I hope I've got this right. That he spent walking to find these five recluses. Because what happened was he had been torturing himself for 6 years, and then he realized it was useless. He realized that if he tortured himself any further, he would die. He couldn't go any further. He'd done everything. He'd stopped eating food. He'd even stopped breathing. He tortured himself in every way possible, and he said, there's no other, I can't go any farther with this, and yet still I have no wisdom and understanding. This is the key, because many people will practice meditation and gain this or gain that and never gain any wisdom or understanding about themselves or about reality. And this is a wake-up call, should be a wake-up call for all of us, for those of us who sit in meditation and find great peace or happiness, and also for those of us who sit in meditation and torture ourselves, that if we're not really gaining wisdom and understanding, then there's something wrong. And so the Buddha said, maybe there's another way. And so he tried to allow these peaceful and happy feelings to arise. He went and ate food and brought his body back to a state of normality, where it wasn't always groaning and complaining to him. And then he started practicing and allowed peaceful and happy feelings to come up and allowed the natural state of the mind to arise. And it was quite peaceful and happy. And so he watched this, and he watched everything that came up, and he came to understand how attachment works. And this is what I've been saying many times, is that if you want to understand attachment, you have to let the pleasure come up. You have to let the desire come up. If you just repress them all the time, then you're not going to be able to see the truth. What we want to understand is our addictions and how to overcome them. And if we don't let them arise, then we'll never be able to understand and overcome them. We'll just always be repressing them. Once we understand the nature of the object of our addiction and the nature of the addiction itself, then we'll be able to overcome it. We'll be able to give it up. This is the path to enlightenment. So the last thing the Buddha realized was that everything that arises based on a cause. And he saw the cause of suffering, and he saw the way out of suffering. He saw that suffering is only caused by craving and clinging. And he saw how it works. That there was nothing, there was no good reason to cling to anything. That it was the clinging itself that was causing the suffering. When Ordinarily, we think that there are certain things that when we cling to them, they're going to bring us happiness. And so we think the way out of suffering is to just arrange things so that we only get those things that are worth clinging to. The Buddha realized that it's the clinging itself that leads to suffering, nothing to do with the object. But the point is that everyone else already thought that, or still thought that, the way out of suffering was to torture yourself. And so these five followers of the Bodhisattva, the Buddha-to-be, became quite disenchanted with him and lost all their faith in him when he started taking food again and stopped torturing himself. So they thought he had given up the path, given up the practice. And so they left. And so now the Buddha went back to find them. And this is where he gave the first teaching. And the first teaching started on this day. This is what this day represents today. It starts with these two extremes. Now this is, some people who read this don't quite understand with the context of this teaching, but this is the real context, the point that the Buddha had come to, the realization that these two extremes were useless, and the fact that these five recluses still thought that it was in terms of these two extremes, that one extreme was the right way, one extreme was the wrong way. The Buddha said both extremes are the wrong way. They thought he had gone back to the other extreme of indulgence, and he said, no, actually, both of these. It's not that I think that pleasure is the right extreme and pain is the wrong extreme. It's that both extremes are useless. Engaging in sensual pleasure leads only to addiction and attachment and partiality. But engaging in torturing yourself is also just repressing and avoiding the nature of clinging. We don't have a problem with unpleasant things. We don't want them. We're not going to cling to unpleasant things. We have to look at the pleasant things that we cling to. Because once we don't cling to anything, then we'll have no partiality. And the unpleasant things will no longer be unpleasant. We have no, we make no comparison. And so this is what we are undertaking here. We are taking the first step, and we take this step again and again when we take the precepts. It's a reaffirmation that we have started on the path, and that we too want to come to see the truth of reality and want to overcome our attachments. And the first step is to focus our energies and to focus our activities in terms of those activities which will bring clarity of mind and wisdom and understanding, while avoiding those activities that are going to cloud the mind. And so this is where we start with these five or eight precepts, with the morality, teaching on morality. The three refuges is simply an asseveration, a determination that we are going to practice. This is like saying, I am committing myself to this path. The Buddha is my teacher, the Dhamma is the teaching I'm following, and the Sangha are my support group, the other Buddhist meditators and practitioners. I'm going to take these three things. And there's a note here that we really should take this seriously, that we should think of the Buddha often. The Buddha recommended to think of him. And we have Buddha images, and we do prostrations in front of the Buddha image. And it's not because of worship or so on. It's just a relationship we have with the Buddha, with someone who reminds us of good things. It's not God. It's not someone who's going to answer our prayers. But it really does have a strong effect on your mind. This is why theistic religions really have a powerful effect on people's minds, because it creates faith and confidence. So if we channel those good, essentially good qualities of mind in a way that is actually meaningful, is the practice to gain wisdom and understanding, then this faith will have a profound effect on our practice, this confidence that we have, thinking, yes, we have this great teacher who taught these wonderful things, and he was right. And we're feeling good and confident about that. And when we have doubts, we just think of how hard the Buddha had to work, and we think of the sacrifice he made, and we think of his example, that it is possible, and his reassurance that someone can practice in this way. So we should think about the Buddha. The Dhamma is something that we should think about. We should study the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the teaching, so we should take this seriously, and we should actually spend time reading the Buddha's teaching, listening to talks, and so on. And you can pick up books, and you can look on the internet. There are textual teachings, and so on. And the Sangha, we really should take this seriously. And here's a chance for me to plug our new website, which is my.suryamangalo.org, which is a chance for everyone to get involved in our group. If you go and log on, I guess everyone here has already logged on, but please do make the most of it. If there are problems with it, let me know. If you have suggestions, let me know. And please do use this website at the very least as a means of communicating with each other. It doesn't mean that we have to come on and post this and post that and be really active. It just means come on every so often, let us know what you're doing or meditating, and you know, if you have any questions, well, if you have questions, you can post them on the ask.suryamangalo.org. But organizing things. Someone started a Dhamma group in England. Owen started a Dhamma group in England based on the Mahasi Sayadaw tradition. So hopefully that group will come together and can use the my.suryamangalo.org. Maybe that will help. You know, different ways that we can use this, at the very least to see that there are other people in our group, and we have somehow an international group. Those people who have come here to practice. Using the Sangha as a support group, because it's great encouragement, and you really do need this kind of encouragement, especially when you're living on your own, surrounded often by people who aren't meditating. So here is an opportunity for us to come together and just post something every so often and read things. You can read, at the very least, you can read what I'm doing, if that's interesting, what we're doing here and the projects that we have and the work that's going on. So this is the three refuges. Then the precepts are the beginning of the practice. The three refuges are just a determination of the practice that we're going to take. The precepts are a beginning of the practice. So we have this determination, okay, my first step is I'm going to focus my activities. And this is going to create concentration, because I'm not going to have this guilt all the time. I'm not going to have clouding in my mind. I'm not going to have anger and greed. I'm going to cut these things off. I'm going to abstain from them. When I want something, I'm going to force myself to look at the wanting. When I don't like something, I'm going to force myself to look at the disliking. When I have views and opinions, I'm going to force myself to challenge them, and to give up views and opinions in favor of realizations and understanding. And so this morality is really for the purpose of the development of concentration or focus and wisdom. Again, I don't like using the word concentration because I think it's misleading. And it's probably not even appropriate. The word is samadhi. Samadhi means composure, really. Samma means same. It doesn't mean same, but it comes from the same root as the word same in English. Samma means level. So when your mind is balanced, having a balanced mind, it doesn't mean you concentrate your mind to the point where you don't experience anything else or so on. It's where you see something perfectly clearly. It's like focusing a camera, as I've said before. You have to focus the camera exactly correctly. If you focus it too much, this would be like concentrating, and then it goes out of focus again. If you don't focus enough, then it doesn't work. You have to find exactly the right focus. And this is simply seeing things as they are. So as we use the technique of being mindful, reminding ourselves, this is seeing, this is hearing, this is smelling, this is tasting. As the Buddha said, when you see something, let it only be seeing. When you hear something, let it only be hearing. So remind yourself, this is seeing, this is hearing. When it's pain, remind yourself, this is pain. When you feel happy, remind yourself, this is happiness. It's not good, it's not bad, it's not me, it's not mine, and so on. By doing this, your mind becomes focused. It comes into focus, and you start to see things clearly. Your mind might not be concentrated, in the sense it might still jump here and there, but when it jumps, you clearly see it jumps, and you see the next object in line as it is. Not as you'd like it to be, or with any projections, but simply and clearly as the reality of what it is. It's actually quite simple. Focus is therefore for the purpose of gaining wisdom, because once you're in focus, you will see things as they are. Once you see things as they are, you'll become free from suffering. Your mind will let go. And this is really the key, that the way to become free from suffering is not by any force of mind. It's simply by understanding things as they are. The only reason one would ever create suffering for oneself is when one doesn't realize that one is creating suffering for oneself. I mean, think about it. No one would ever do something if they knew that that thing was going to cause them harm. If they really understand, the only reason we do things is because we think it has some benefit, that there's some purpose to it, that this is a good thing to do. Once you see clearly that something is not a good thing to do, that there's no benefit that comes from it, then you give it up. If you examine it and you see that there is benefit and it does create goodness and peace and happiness, then you develop it. So the only thing we need to do in order to become free from suffering is quite simple. It's just to see things as they are, because you'll never do something that is useless when you know that it's useless. The problem is we don't know that many of the things that we do and say and think are useless and detrimental to ourselves and to other beings. So this is a brief exposition of what this ceremony means and what this day means or should mean to all of us, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining. Maybe before we quit, for those of you who still have time and it's not too late or too early in the morning, we can do a short meditation, group meditation, and then I'll take questions if there are still people left, and we can go from there. So I'm going to start with a meditation. You're welcome to leave whenever you want. I'm not going to keep the audio on now. I'm going to turn the audio off, so you can just set your own timer, or just peek every so often and see when the text chat. I think if you turn the sound on in the text chat, there's a little speaker in the bottom right corner. If you click that, then every time someone says something, it gives you a beep. So after 15 minutes, I'm going to say something, and you'll hear that beep. Otherwise, this has been another episode of Monk Radio. Thanks for tuning in.